Hey everybody, sorry for the delay in getting this one out to you. It's a podcast day, but I've been in the literal sticks with no internet. So, this one's a little bit late, but I got a good reaction from the live reacts of listening to JJ and Michael deliver a podcast. So, now that I have internet and I can return to listen to them, we'll get this one out.
As expected, Andy's signal is not happening, so.
Yeah. I don't
know. He seemed optimistic, but I was not.
Yeah, the word was there was no signal at that campsite. We had actually been originally invited, and just scheduling didn't work out for us to go. But that was one of the selling points.
All right, first interruption. It's wonderful to not have internet once in a while. It's really cool. It's very liberating. Some of the things that you feel like you have to do every day just don't have to get done, and also, some things just don't exist until you return to the world, right? So, like, someone's problem at work that they email you about, just, it doesn't exist unless the email can physically get to you. So, it's pretty nice. It's unfortunate I couldn't join the guys for this podcast, but maybe they'll talk about that kind of relaxation. Who knows? All right, on with the show.
All right, I got some stuff on here. What do you want me to add?
I know Andy wanted to talk about it, but like, I've been playing a lot of Animal Well.
Well, we're going to talk about it. He ain't here. That's his problem.
Well, yeah, that's been taking up a bunch of my time. I have played a little more, Forbidden West though, as well.
It's We Were Gamers episode 407. How you doing, Michael?
You know what, JJ, there is no Monday that cannot be improved by chocolate cake.
Damn fine chocolate cake.
Yeah, there was one of the projects at work, not even mine, hit a milestone today, or I guess very recently, and we're basically closing in on the end of our fiscal year very rapidly here. And so one of the program managers brought in a giant chocolate cake to celebrate. And so
love me a chocolate cake.
There was chocolate cake and much rejoicing in the office.
Nice. I mean, we'll take monetary bonuses, but if we're not getting those, at least a chocolate cake isn't going to hurt anything, right?
I mean, have you met an engineer?
Oh, man.
Right. I know how it goes.
We'll show up if there's free food.
Someone brings in bagels and cream cheese to the office, and everyone's like whole swarms of locusts descending on the crops.
You see the prairie dogs in the cube farm, yeah. Right?
What? Yeah.
Where's
yeah.
the?
Totally. Well, that's great, man. The damn fine was a Twin Peaks reference.
I'm drinking my coffee right now.
Twin Peaks.
Ah, nice. How's it going?
You know, man, I'm watching Twin Peaks The Return, so it's season 3. Episodes 13 and 14 were the ones I just watched this week. There are 18 total. You know, as I explained to Andy in some previous weeks, being able to appreciate a show as art feels so different from like watching TV normally. You know, it, like, because I've seen this before, and I kind of know the general arc of how this goes, I'm able to like watch it as though it is like a movie or as though it is like an art project. And like, I'm expecting different things, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
I feel like I'm stretching more, you know, critical muscles in my brain that I haven't dealt with, you know, since I like watched movies for, you know, classes and stuff like that. Right. Which I, to be fair, never really did. But you know, it's like that kind of stuff, right? It's like a, you know, like an art criticism kind of muscle that I'm stretching. It feels like,
yeah, it's a different way of engaging with television than your usual, you know, flip through the channels sort of.
Because like I know the plot generally, right? And so then it's like it's not interesting to watch for the plot. It's interesting to watch for like, oh, what do I think they mean by this? Like, why would they do this? As opposed to like, why plot wise would they do it? Like, why did the creators put this scene here when they could have not?
Right. Right. Yeah.
And it's especially interesting because, you know, it's like, I know there's only 18 episodes. See, episode 14, very close to the end, effectively. And there's a lot of unresolved stuff. And like, why do it like this? You know, like, what was the intent of all of this? And so it's been interesting, like, thinking about that and, like, considering it as the show is going on. And then also knowing what happens at the end, seeing the little bits of breadcrumbs that are being laid here and there throughout, where it's like, you know. So gaining an appreciation for that stuff when it's definitely, like, I watched it the first time. I definitely had that feeling in the moment that was like, what the hell is going on? I'm just so confused, you know? And I have a much better appreciation for it this time. So that's been fun.
Yeah, that's always fun to, to engage with a property that you know in a different way because you're able to do it because you know it so well.
If you really like a movie or a film, if you want to be more critical about it, you know, you could change its name from movie to film. I don't know. Something that I've done in the past, or something that I have done while reading as well, is you do it a second time like JJ is doing here, but also you take notes, and you'll start to find your notes will trend in a direction of recognizing patterns and motifs throughout the work that you're actually going through. And you can do it with anything. If you want to flex this muscle that he's talking about, you can kind of do this with almost any piece of fiction or nonfiction, if it's philosophy or things like that. UC Irvine, where I went, had comparative literature, which tried to thread the needle of being critical and also taking from multiple genealogies almost of creation, which is something that David Lynch is doing, right? He's taking multiple avenues of input to create art.
Yeah. I think it's been, it's just been nice to like stretch my mind in like, you know, more adult directions, I guess, let's say, as opposed to, I've watched a lot of TV that has been like the prestige kind of TV stuff. You know, I watched X-Men 97. We've been watching that Acolyte show. We started the House of the Dragon show recently. And all that is very much like plotty, plot, 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 plotty, plot, plot kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this is very much like now hey, what about feelings and emotions and like, you know, big metaphysical ideas, which none of those shows have. No. Not that that's bad or anything. It doesn't have to be. Just different, you know, so it was nice to go in a little different direction. Speaking of different directions this week, a topic that has always come up approximately around this time on these podcasts, it's Comic-Con season. It's coming in, right?
I think we are officially a month out as of the recording of this from Comic-Con.
Yeah. I know we'll be, my wife and I will be on a little vacation just slightly before Comic-Con, and then we'll come back and do the con effectively. But I know some people have already started receiving their badges. Information about the exclusives and stuff is coming out. So that stuff is all out there, or starting to get out there anywho.
Yeah, it's starting to trickle out. And, we just got our badges over the weekend, in fact.
Ah, nice, nice. Yeah, mine has not arrived yet. So what's the cool stuff this year?
Is it nice though, JJ?
Is it nice, Michael?
So it sounds like you have heard a little bit about what is starting to be a lament among the con goers who have received their badges.
Yeah, maybe did they fire the graphic design team?
Ah. I don't know, JJ. I mean, if they fired the graphic design team, they also fired anyone at the company who knows how to do Control C, Control V.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know, who aren't con goers, the badges at Comic-Con have always been kind of like a free space for advertising for whatever company is sponsoring the badges that year. So what have we had recently? We had Walking Dead in the last couple of years or two. And so, you know, you've got,
I think Gen V has been on there a few times, right? And the Boys maybe in some previous years.
Yeah, but it's basically you're handing out a free picture of your property, be it TV or movie, to tens of thousands of congoers who are going to be staring at it every day for 5 days.
And then who are forced to wear it and carry it around for 5 days as well.
Yeah, exactly. They have their own and they see it on everyone around them.
And so in the grand tradition of things like, you know, the Avengers and DC and all things that have been on there in the past, what do we got this year, Michael?
This year we have the beautiful blue and white logo of Paramount Plus.
Oh, and so they're promoting a show? What's
No. The whole badge is the logo of Paramount Plus.
Oh. It's like a giant blue rectangle.
Uh-huh.
With like a small white Paramount Plus logo in the middle.
That would be the one.
Huh. Wow, that sure seems dumb.
I don't get how you drop such an easy to hold on to ball, right? It's not like Paramount Plus has a lack of programming that they could pitch to people.
Yeah. Not clear what the plan is here. There's stuff on there, you know, and I'm sure they have stuff that's coming out soon or stuff that's out now that they could advertise to people.
Yeah. Right. Lower Decks. Boom. You're done. You're welcome.
I guarantee you, JJ is going to say this next. But they're canceling Lower Decks, and they're also canceling most of the other Star Trek content, and they have already canceled a bunch of their Star Trek content, and I don't know that they have much actual else on that platform, so they might just be advertising the platform. It's tough because there's no one else to advertise there anymore. Disney owns almost all the properties that used to invest heavily in Comic-Con. The only other large comics company other than Marvel, owned by Disney, is DC, and DC no longer invests in Comic-Con either. They must be lacking advertisers, and Paramount is lacking in content, as far as I can tell. So this is the inevitable result of what you get.
Yeah, they ain't get and Lower Decks people ain't got that kind of money. That's not happening. Because, like, you know, I mean, look, there's obviously a transaction happening here, right? It's not just like that show gets promoted on that badge for $0, right?
Sure.
Comic-Con's getting that money. But, you know, if you're paying the money, you might as well put something useful on there.
Yeah. If you're, you know, if you're Paramount, get some kind of return for signing up to sponsor the badges.
Yeah, I mean, you got some kind of thing to promote, right? If the idea is we're just promoting our brand, the streaming service, what are we even doing here? Like,
yeah, people are just going to, they're just going to gloss over. They're just going to see the blue rectangle and it's not even going to register by, you know, by day two that it's Paramount Plus.
Right. It'd be like putting the Netflix logo on there. It's like, what are people going to, you see the Netflix logo on something, you just ignore, right? Yeah. Like, it's not a process.
You catch people by showing them something that either they've already enjoyed or that, oh yeah, I should go check that out.
Totally. You know, showing the Paramount Plus logo isn't going to drive anyone to be like, oh, I should sign up for Paramount Plus, the home of such movies and shows as, you know what? I guess I'm watching Twin Peaks on there, so that's something.
There you go. There's one.
Yeah. A show from 2017 on Showtime specifically. What else they got? You know, I'm sure they've got like reality shows. They've got Star Trek. They've got, you know, other stuff I'm sure that I'm just not aware of because I don't watch modern TV. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, serialized, non-serialized, like, you know, comedy sitcom type stuff. Or reality shows. So I'm sure they have stuff they could have put on there, right?
They absolutely do. And wouldn't this have been a great opportunity to tell you about that stuff?
Nope, apparently. blue logo. It was a choice. And so then now they get the fun of being dragged on the internet constantly for how stupid their thing looks.
Yep. For 6 weeks.
Great. Great move, guys. I know some people like don't get to go to this very often too, so they save these badges as mementos and keepsakes and stuff like that, and they'll have to stare at that for forever. That feels real bad too.
Yeah, this is not a year to keep.
Just losing all directions, really. Oh boy. Well, we should get it out of the way up front because we're going to get here eventually. This is the COTC podcast sometimes. And there was a tavern talk today, so we should go through it a little bit for the gotcha sickos out there like us.
It's for me. They're recapping it for me because I wasn't able to watch it and I can't get any messages. And I often have so many questions about this stuff. They're just hoping against hope that I listen to this before I get back into reception and inundate them with questions about the new update that's coming with thousands of things in it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. It was it was kind of a quiet tavern talk. And I think that I think the analogy that I made to you and Andy was a good one. This was the opening act, and we're waiting for the headliner to come on stage in 2 weeks.
So is it going to be 2 weeks? This is something I saw, like I was reading on the Discord and some other places today, that people were kind of like, well, is it 2 weeks or is it next week? Because that's been like, people were sort of assuming it would be like a bang bang kind of situation with this.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of back and forth in the speculation. I don't think anyone knows definitively that it's going to be 2 weeks, but they did announce a different banner for next week as part of the Tavern Talk today.
Okay.
So it seems between that and the fact that they announced another Tavern Talk in just 2 weeks, kind of leads you to believe that that what's coming is not for another couple of weeks as opposed to next week.
Yeah. So the I guess to be clear, what they announced is the collab with Live Alive, Live Alive.
Live Alive is how they pronounced it.
Finally. Finally. We finally know how to say the silly name of that game. I assume they named it that so that they could have people wonder, is it Live Alive, Live Alive, Live Alive? Right. I mean, maybe it's clearer in Japanese.
Live Alive. Okay. It's an RPG from old Squaresoft days.
Yes.
It did recently get one of the like 2.5D HD kind of remakes. Somewhat, right?
Yeah, and it got brought, you know, to the West because right, it had originally been a Japanese only title.
Right, famously never released in the West. So, you know, it's out there for folks who want to play it. I think it is well respected in terms of like, hey, this is one of those old good ones that never came out here, but you know, it is still an older type game. And yeah, so we get some new units here, a new story content, it sounds like. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, we get some new hunts, which is good because I think we had all kind of been complaining that the hunt that was tied to that Bravely Default collab, while it was good that it had made it as a permanent hunt, had kind of dried up in terms of utility.
Yeah, so we're getting a new permanent hunt there related to this collab.
Yes.
But it's not using the same resource, so you... all the stockpiling is still be useless.
Yeah, so different resource. It sounds like there is a whole lot of things to trade that resource for, which will be good.
Yeah, and some stuff that you made it sound like is pretty legit, like some trinkets, like some accessories that are like pretty unique. So that would be cool.
Yeah, new weapon set, a bunch of new accessories that have some fun and unique abilities, things that we haven't seen in accessories up to this point. So
that was something I wasn't sure about. Can you also farm these weapons, or is it only through the exchange?
So I'm not sure. So the materials that you need to make the weapons, you get from the hunts.
Okay.
So you can farm them, I believe, but I think that it's also, I don't know what quantities it takes to make them and what quantities you can farm them in. So it might take a little while to make several sets of them, but in the long run, yes, they are farmable.
Because it could be the thing like the Bravely Default one was, right, where the story interweaves between the hunts, right? And then
Right.
You can, in theory, go back to the story part of the dungeon and farm a little bit there.
Yeah, and there is a story component.
Okay.
They did announce that. So I'm not sure if the story component also drops the materials. So we'll find out on Wednesday how it all ties together. I do know that there are more like the Nier Automata collab. There are 4 hunts instead of 3.
Okay. So that means there's probably one that's at a higher level, which would be good.
Yes. I think the highest level hunt for this one is only 65. So a little more accessible for people who haven't been playing since the beginning.
Well, that's still good, though. I mean, you know, it's important to get people who are, you know, mid-leveled or stuff like that, or aren't all the way through the stories and powerful equipment, which is...
Yeah,
very cool. And so the new weapons are also pretty legit, it seems.
Yeah, so the new weapons are kind of a trade right now. I think the best weapons in the main story, at least in the overworld, are the fortune weapons. And so the new series, much like the fortune weapons, has soul slots. So there's a little bit of dice rolling there on the RNG. And they trade a little bit of power, so they don't hit as hard, but they also give you bonus attributes. So you get HP regen for your warriors, you get buff and debuff extension on your dancers and thieves, respectively. Each weapon type has its own unique attribute that is tuned to that class. And they all sound, just hearing the descriptions of them, they all sound like they'll have utility.
Yeah. Yeah. You were telling me some of them sounded like, you know, it's a, oh, this dancer one is similar to the Brave Fan, but then some of the other ones are, you know, like, the daggers extend debuff duration, which is pretty hot.
Yeah. What was the other one? I think tomes get damage cap up. So your scholars who are single target nuke scholars now have, I think it's 50k damage up.
I mean, that's all right. I mean, I don't know what single target tome scholars you got, but hey.
Molu and Frederica are the two that come to mind.
Frederica has a strength stat?
No, so sorry, it's cap up on their magic attacks.
Damage
cap up.
I misunderstood that completely. It's just damage cap up for anything, not physical only. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's pretty hot. Frederica is like salivating now.
Yeah, she cannot, she in particular cannot get enough damage cap up.
Yeah, she can't not. It's impossible to not hit the cap. You're always doing it, even without trying.
Yeah.
So very cool. That's sick.
Yeah. So it'll be cool. We get a free unit out of it at the end of the day. We get a whole bunch of free rubies.
Yeah. It sounds like there's some good free stuff that we can get out of that, which is always welcome.
Yeah. And then I'm excited for the music.
Yeah. So you were telling me this is new music, or at least new. Is this Live Alive music, or is this just new music for this game?
This is Live Alive music.
Okay. And we all know the OG Squaresoft RPGs have god tier music.
Oh, yeah.
Like the original, like Final Fantasy VI's, you know, this is from that era of Squaresoft. So the music was banging back then. And I heard a couple of these tracks and they are good. And this game already has good music, to be clear, right?
Oh, yeah, it does. It is Yoko Shimomura. She has quite the resume, but Kingdom Hearts 2, Super Mario RPG, yeah, Final Fantasy 15.
Let's not cloud her resume with things like Kingdom Hearts, but you know, clearly Super Mario RPG and Final Fantasy games are up there.
How about Street Fighter 2?
Yeah, one of the best.
Yeah, music wise for sure.
Yeah, shoot. I mean, Street Fighter 2 has some of the most classic songs and themes, I think, ever. You play that Guile's theme, everyone knows, right?
Yeah. So she knows how to write a song that gets stuck in your head.
Yeah, very cool. I'm interested to try it. Like, you know, I never really played this game. It was always one of those, you know, back in the old days, like very early internet, it was always one of those like whispered about games that like, oh, it was out there in Japan that was so cool that, you know, you Americans never got kind of thing.
Yeah. You could find some fan translation ROMs.
Right. And they were always pretty jank. And you were like, oh, is this really like, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, cool. They brought it out, and now cool that we're getting to taste it in here in a very cool format. So we'll definitely check this out.
Yeah, I think there's excitement for it to start, and then even more excitement for the second phase of it to hit in a couple of weeks.
And the thought is the second phase of this collab is where the like real powerful units are. These guys are kind of like in the first phase are kind of like whatever. But the second phase dudes are like cracked.
Yes, ODOO in particular just casually gives perma crit buff to your front row.
Crit is pretty good. I don't know if people know that.
Plus, you know, a flat plus 20% damage. I'll take that.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Magic users am cry.
Unfortunate. Well, until we get a character that can give magic crit, but yes.
Is the fact that you have to waste a person to let that happen is already a downside when all the physical people don't need it, right? But that's good. Look, you know, it should be more fair. Sorcerers rise up, you know. Speaking of rising up, I have been on a quest to re-become the Elden Lord.
All right. I rose up the mountain again.
I rose up once before. And have now been reclimbing that mountain. And I'm most of the way there. It's like under 40 hours. I'm over level 120. I have completed the requirements to enter the DLC, so I could just go there now if I bought the DLC now, which I haven't done. but I've done most of the work. You know, there's still a few more bosses I want to try and tick off, like some of the end game ones, which are going to help me level up a bunch more because they're more powerful, so you get more stuff for them. But like my build is effectively complete, right? Like I have all the sweet items that I'm going to use. Switching back and forth between some really cool hammers, one of which is just like this giant like stone hammer brick thing. Takes like 60 strength to wield, which is like an insane amount. You start with like 13.
Okay.
And all it does is just it hit good. That's it. And I bonk people with it real hard, and it's fun. It's a good game. You hit people with a big hammer. The nice thing about it also is that it tends to stagger them because it's like such a big heavy hit, you know, it will typically like interrupt their animations or interrupt stuff that they're doing. Not always, right? Like some, you know, bosses and stuff may be quite a bit harder to, but it's definitely easy enough that you can, you know, interrupt normal enemies. You can interrupt a lot of attacks, which then just lets you kind of go to town on people because you just keep like spamming these hits all over and over and over, which has been really fun. So like base Elden Ring seems pretty easy so far. Now, to be fair, I'm like, you know, I'm using guides. I'm just like trying to get as overpowered as quickly as possible. I'm not like, you know, strategizing hard here. I'm using the Mimic Tier Ash, which is like easily the best little like self summon you can use in the game for sure.
Okay, yeah.
And to be clear, like the Mimic Tier, it's just a little dude that spawns a copy of you effectively. So whatever items and weapons you have equipped, that's what it has equipped to. And then it just runs in and attacks for you. Which is great. It's not as strong as you. Like there's a little scaling back on the damage and stuff like that. But you know,
it can like, still draw attention away from you,
which is 500% the point.
Yes.
Very important when the boss is like, you know, jumping and flipping and causing all kinds of crazy explosions and stuff, that those explosions are centered over there. And I am standing behind and to the left of this. So that as soon as that's done, I can walk in and hit them with the big hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's been cool. I also have a sword, that has like some fire properties and, gains health back on kills, which is cool for like fighting through dungeons and stuff. As you're killing a bunch of weak mobs, it's constantly healing you, which is pretty nice.
So yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, I will too. And it's been really fun. So it's been cool going through that again. You know, I'm not like one-shotting every boss. You know, it's definitely still hard work for some of them, but it's like, you know, four tries of hard work, not 50. So, you know, it's been good. It turns out that, you know, it doesn't take 100 hours to play Elden Ring, when you know where you're going and you generally have like an idea of what to do when you get there. So yeah, I'm excited to go check out the DLC soon. But I expect I'm going to go in there and then just get my butt kicked over and over, which seems to be the way of things in Elden Ring.
Yeah, now that you're back to not knowing what you're doing.
Yeah, and like even if I do look up what I'm supposed to do, it's like knowing what you're supposed to do and having done it before are different things too, right?
Right, yeah, exactly. You can see it done, but actually making the magic happen yourself is another thing completely.
Right. Elden Ring is like riding a bicycle to some degree, right? And I don't know that analogy fully fits, but when you're like, oh, right, I remember last time I was here, they do this and this, and you got to do this other thing, right? And then you got to dodge to the left, not the right. And then it's like, you just remember that stuff instinctively, or you'll be back in it and you're like, oh, right, he does that, and I got to go that way instead of this way. And then you do it, and then, you know, all of a sudden you've avoided a whole thing that took you 20 deaths to learn last time.
Right.
So yeah, it's been fun. Really, really enjoying it again. You know, because at some degree, especially when you're closer to the end of the game, it's just very chill to just like ride around and like smack mobs with your giant hammer as you run through. You know, and you know, just get your running back and forth the little caves to level up and stuff like that. So it's been fun going through. I'm excited to get into the DLC sooner or later here, but. Again, not really rushing stuff. As we've noted here, there's a lot of stuff coming up between Comic-Con and I'm going on a trip and some other stuff. So it'll be get to it when we get to it, right?
Yeah, plenty else going on.
What about you, Michael? Let's check in on some games from you.
You know, I have Andy challenged me last week. He challenged me and I took it to heart. He said I needed to pick up a game, and so I picked up a game. I have been playing the new hotness that is Animal Well.
I'm so jealous right now. I want to play that game. It looks really fun. I don't know when I'm going to get to it. I don't know how I'm going to control myself and not step all over every comment he makes with questions, because he can't answer my questions. I have a lot of control-based questions. I have a lot of Steam Deck questions. Oh, shoot, that's probably a spoiler.
So I don't know. I don't know how much you've heard about this game, but I know that in the last several weeks, I saw news about it blowing up everywhere.
I have listened to several relatively lengthy podcast discussions about it, none of which I have played any, though. So I have not played it at all, but I have heard quite a bit about it through other people talking.
Okay. It is a Metroidvania, kind of through and through. So you start you're in a labyrinth, basically, and you're not really given too much in the way of direction. So right off the bat, when you start, there's a little squirrel, and as you approach him, he takes off. With the kind of clear implication, you know, saying things without saying things, that you're supposed to follow him. And okay. So you start off following him through parts of this labyrinth. And as you begin to explore a little bit more, you can sort of take context clues from your surrounding environments.
I love minimalist game introductions. Brothers is similar to this, and I think a lot more games should do this instead of running you through tutorials of controls and controls and controls. Just like, people know how to play games, man. And if they don't, you know, we didn't know this in the past, right? It didn't say press right to make Mario run right. And now it does, I'm sure, on some versions of Mario, but it didn't used to, right? Just like make Mario run right.
As to things you might be able to try, things you can interact with, and you're basically starting to unravel the secrets of this labyrinth as you explore more and more of it. And so from the beginning, all your little bubble character can do is jump, And so you start hopping around and you can pick up items and interact with things like switches in your environment. But you can't do too much else. But kind of quickly as you start exploring, you begin picking up items, very classic Metroidvania style, right? With that you can use as tools and to manipulate your environment and to make the animals that you encounter in this labyrinth behave in certain ways.
So before you get too deep here, all you can do is jump. So then what is the like combat? How do you fight things? You said there are other animals around. What's the deal?
So there are other animals around. You don't really, as far as I have found, you don't really fight things too much. There are, one of the first items that you encounter are firecrackers. And there are a couple of little ghost-type creatures that will start to chase you as soon as you enter their room, and you can dispel them by throwing a firecracker. But that's one of the few animals, other characters that you run into, that you can really defeat in combat. A lot of the other interactions are really, how do you use what this animal can do to aid you? So there are some animals that will, as soon as they see you, they'll start walking towards you, and they don't hurt you, and you can jump on them and use them as platforms. So you have to kind of lure them where you want to be able to climb higher.
Okay, so it's really like puzzle solving, really, but yeah, like in a weird
a lot of it is
Metroid-y way.
Yep. And so there are some that you can manipulate in other ways. There are some that actively try to hinder you, and so you have to figure out how to avoid them and get around them.
Sure.
And there are a few I've encountered one of them so far, sort of boss animals that you have to figure out how to get past to progress.
Okay. So it sounds like this is a very open kind of fluid situation. You kind of do a lot of stuff, go a lot of places.
Yes. Yeah. Most of the labyrinth is pretty open. You're really only gated by those sections that require you to have one of the items to progress.
Okay.
So one of the items is a yo-yo, and the yo-yo you can use to press buttons that are, say, they're underneath a platform you're standing on. The yo-yo, when you throw it, will stick to the bottom of the platform. So it'll kind of walk itself along the bottom of the platform and press the switch for you. You can use that to open doors that you couldn't reach by yourself.
Okay. Very interesting. So it's sort of a challenge of like, what can I do with the items that I have and how do they work versus what's in front of me?
Yep. And some of it is trial and error. I was exploring the map yesterday and discovered by accident, I pressed the wrong button, that, the spikes that line the ground in some rooms and do damage can be shattered by the yo-yo.
Oh.
So now I can jump towards this pit of spikes and throw the yo-yo down, and it shatters the spikes, and I can land where the spikes were. And now I can clear out all the spikes, and hey, there's a path hidden over here.
Ah, okay. So that's interesting. Do they not tell you that when you pick up the yo-yo? Like what?
They do not. So all it tells you is you found a yo-yo, and that's it. Now you have a yo-yo you can play with and see what it can do.
Yeah, I'm going to have to play this game. That sounds cool as heck.
Oh, wild. So, we should put a spoiler warning up at the top by telling people what it can do. We're spoiling stuff.
I should have said. Yeah,
I didn't think about that. Spoiler. Okay, yeah. Oh, wow, cool. So then, kind of the whole idea is, like, you just, like, go places and throw what you got out there and see how it goes.
Yeah, you have to experiment a little bit with each item as you get it in turn and sort of peel back the layers of the onion on, this can do this and this can do that, and that means I can go over here.
Oh, wow.
So they have made reminding yourself of the things you find a little bit easier. There's a you very early on you get a stamp set, and you can put stamps on the map, and there are eight or nine different stamps that you can use. Just as little marker reminders to yourself of, hey, there's a chest here that I couldn't reach when I came through the first time, or there's a passage here that I want to explore, but I clearly need something else to be able to get up to it.
Okay. Interesting. So I wonder, is there like a... Well, I guess not, because it sounds like they're not telling you anything. So it's like, do you have any sense of like how many items there are, or like how far you are into the thing?
Yeah, so I at least know how many items there are of ones that I can use regularly, because your inventory only has 8 slots.
Oh, okay. So then like there's a pretty good chance you can't have more than what's going to show up there.
Right. So it's divided into a couple of different sections. It's really just a small box with four or five little subsections in it. So one of them are your main items you can use, like the yo-yo. Another one is things like keys for unlocking doors. And so, you know, Zelda style, it'll keep a count of how many keys you're carrying.
Okay. So like you could find a bunch of keys but not have used any, and then you could wander along a bunch of blocked rooms later.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, it's very, like, Metroid original style almost, right?
Yes, very much so.
That's cool. So what is then, the, like... Okay, oh no, continue, sorry.
No, I was gonna change gears just a little bit and talk a bit about the aesthetic.
Okay, yeah, what is the vibe?
Yeah, it is very much like you are in a cave. It has this very cool blue and green and purple color palette going on. And the sort of pixelated nature of it actually reminds me of Celeste.
Oh, okay. Well, that's like, look, Celeste is one of the best, you know?
Yeah. So it has that same kind of pixelated, but also super high detail texturing going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, like intentionally pixely.
Yes, intentionally pixely, but much, much higher definition than you would have gotten from the era that it is trying to evoke.
Okay, and I guess like the era it was trying to evoke also probably wouldn't have explained anything. So that's
pretty It would have been very much like that kind of early Metroid, where it just drops you into it, and it's your sandbox to start exploring, and you can poke and prod and kind of, you know, in a way, kind of like Metroid, if you're good enough with some of the items, maybe you can access some areas that you don't have the easiest tool to get there, but you can do it the hard way.
Okay. So like I'm just thinking out loud with the stuff that you've said so far, right? Like, maybe there's some way you could use that yo-yo that you were talking about to like make some kind of a really silly jump that really, you know, yes, is technically possible, but maybe isn't really how they want you to do this.
Yeah. So the easiest way that I can describe it to you. So the first item that you come across is the first one that I came across anyway, was the bubble wand. And your character is so small that you can jump onto bubbles.
Okay.
And bubbles in the game in general rise. If you're standing on one, they float. And if you jump off of one, they pop. That's just the basic mechanics. You encounter bubbles even before you find the wand. So you kind of know that that's how they work.
Okay.
The wand lets you create a single bubble at a time, which you can then jump up and jump off of. Now, the wand doesn't have really any restrictions on casting, and the responsiveness is pretty instant. So you can jump, cast a bubble as you're going up, and then land on that same bubble.
Okay, so it's like you
can start to see how the climbing is going to start to work using this.
Sure, sure. But the bubble doesn't rise while you're on it, right? So you have to jump every time you want to gain height.
Exactly, yep.
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, and then all of the maps... Unlike a Metroid game, all of the maps are contiguous and wrap.
Oh, that's interesting. So you're like if you're sections at the bottom of zones.
No, so if you're there are sort of zones, but they're not curtained off from each other, let's say. So if you're at the bottom of a shaft and you want to bubble jump your way to the top of it, have at it.
And maybe there's like thematic connection between the areas, but yes. There's nothing stopping you from like, you know, going left instead of right here and you're in a different place. It's just
exactly
the flow of the zone. Okay, interesting. Wow. Oh, that's very interesting. So, like, you know, you can see almost the Castlevania style one giant map, but it sounds like stuff is way more interconnected than even in Castlevania.
Yes. Yeah.
Cool. So, how are you liking it though? Because like these kinds of games are like live on a spectrum, I feel, and the spectrum is like this game is from the left side is like this game is way too easy, and the character is like unchallenged, and the other end of the spectrum is like this game was cool when I had all the powers and they took them away from me and now it sucks. Right. And it's like, or the very beginning of the game where you can't do anything and it feels horrible to move and like the jumping sucks and everything. Yeah. Because you haven't unlocked the double and triple jumps and the like slide and all this other stuff. Right. So like, you know, the spectrum from like, I have every power in the game and I can move with impunity to the, like, everything feels horrible because I have to make progression, right? Like where along this spectrum is this? Because it sounds like, because normally then the gate in a lot of these Metroidvania type games is, well, yeah, like, but you get better at the combat and stuff as you go along, but there's no combat. So like, what is the just
no. So in this, you get better at the movement. I have definitely found as I'm playing that I have gotten a lot better at using the bubbles to get around the environment.
Okay, so deciding, you are like,
oh, hey, there's a platform up there. I want to climb to it. I can see how this room wants me to get there, but I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to hop on bubbles up to the top of the room.
Okay, so there is places where you like feel like you've gained something out of this because it's like, well, you know, you're not. It doesn't sound like you're getting like a double jump here, but there definitely is a. Like, oh, this room used to require me to run all the way to that side and back over. And instead, now I just hop up a couple bubbles. And
yeah, exactly. Okay. But it's definitely like even from the beginning, even without any of the tools, it I think the fact that it's one, the fact that it's so open and you can sort of just pick a direction. Like I mentioned the squirrel, but you don't have to go that way. You can pick your own direction and go see, oh, what's over here? What can I get to? And it's very open. Like you can still do a lot of things even without going in the direction that it's prodding you into from the start.
Have you gone back and tried going some of those other directions at this point?
I have. I've explored. There's no percentage counter, at least not that I've found or unlocked. But I think I've explored a pretty good amount of the map, maybe 60%, 50 or 60% of the map.
Okay. And you said it wraps like screen wrap from side to side?
Yes. Yes.
So that kind of gives you an idea of where the end of the map would be, I guess, right?
Yes.
Have you seen it wrap from top to bottom? Is that something that we know? Or do we
I have not gotten to a point where it would let me do that.
Okay. I was just curious.
I don't know if it wraps from top to bottom. I would guess maybe not, but you never know.
Okay. I'm prodding at the edges here trying to understand.
Sure. But even from the outset, just the vibe, the music is kind of very very quiet and a little bit it's just like a little bit haunting but very chill. The whole vibe is kind of one of serenity, right? Other than those moments where it very much wants you to feel a sense of urgency, it is very laid back and very serene. And I think that helps with those moments, right? The contrast between the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense, right? It seems like the vibe is very chill in general, so it makes sense to be sort of chill, unless it wants you to be anxious about something, and then it will, you know, like you said, the ghosts or whatever, right? Like maybe the ghosts come after you and would get anxious there, but
right,
that makes sense. Very cool. So how are you feeling about it? How long have you been playing it? What's the like hour count looking like here?
My hour count I think is 3.5.
Okay.
So 3.5 hours in, I have found 5 of the 8 items so far.
Okay.
And I have gotten past one of what I think are 4 quote unquote boss animals. In very Metroid style, one of the first rooms you come across has 4 giant animal statues looming in the background.
Oh, okay. I see how that goes. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And you don't know what it is when you first walk through, but if you've played a Metroid game, you kind of know what it is.
You got some thoughts there about what's going to happen, maybe.
Yeah, you have some feelings. So I have found and let's say defeated one of the animals.
Such as it may be, perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool. So, but I still feel like it's the kind of thing where because you can access so much, but you can't necessarily go in every direction from every room, there's that constant feeling of, oh, I want to go this way, but I also want to go that way. And I need to remind myself to come back to this room later so that I can access this point. And there's that constant pull, right? Of the things that you can do versus the things that you want to do and the things that you don't want to forget.
So is there any indication that you can, I guess you said you can put markers on the map and stuff.
Yes.
Okay, I was going to say, is there any indication that you can see where it's like, oh, there's still more to do here. Oh, there's like, you know, come back. There's something else that you haven't seen or whatever.
Yeah, there absolutely is. There are, they do a good job in certain places of, you'll find like a secret passage from one section to another. And the secret passage will take you into a screen where you can see another room that shows up on that section of the map that you're looking at. And there's something in that room, right? There's a plunger or a switch or a treasure chest. Mm-hmm. And you don't necessarily know how to get there yet. But you know that there is something there that you'll need to find a way around to get or come back to where you are with a different tool to be able to, you know, work your way to what they're showing you.
And so does it mark that on your map? Is there like a treasure chest indicator? Is there a way for you to tell that like, oh, there was something here? Like, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, 2 hours ago you saw something and now you get the yo-yo or whatever and you want to come back. But like, where do you go? You know?
Yeah. So you kind of have to use the stamps for that. They do mark certain things on your map, but things like treasure chests or, you know, walls that you could potentially break through don't get marked.
Okay, so they really do want you to engage with the like map icons and that kind of stuff.
And they give you 64 of them.
All right, that's quite a few.
So you have a lot of map icons that you can play with.
Okay, very cool. So you're liking it so far?
I am definitely liking it so far.
Cool. We'll definitely have to check back in another week here after you've played some more.
Yeah, I know Andy has some thoughts that he wanted to talk about with it too. So,
Well, this is what happens when you go on assignment, Andy. You know.
So I've heard. I do have a lot of comments, but I think they're mostly questions. So, be prepared.
You missed the hot video game gossip.
Yeah. So I'll for next time I will see if I can't dive deeper into the well.
Very cool. I guess we'll give it. Do a quick little rundown here. You said, have you still been playing a little Forbidden West on the side as well?
I have. I haven't set that completely aside.
How are we feeling about Aloy?
Feeling pretty good. So I finally made it out of the first city. I am furthering the cause of diplomacy by making a summit happen. That's kind of your first big task. To open up the portal that is the major pathway to the west. So okay. I'm still trying to make my way out west. I did complete hunting ground. If you remember the hunting grounds from the original game,
hey, those were like the trial based ones. Some of those were pretty tough.
Yeah, they were the trial based ones. The one that you slid down on a rope into the enclosed area with a very specific set of goals that you had to accomplish.
Some really messed up ones, if I remember.
Yeah, there were some tough ones. In the first hunting ground, I cleared all 3 without too much trouble, And I felt, and maybe this was just me kind of knowing going in how to approach them, but I felt like they were much more generous with the time gates, at least in the first one. So the amount of time that they give you to get gold, silver, bronze level, I felt like was very generous. I cleared each of them with plenty of time to spare.
I felt like maybe it's just the first one too, but like you said, I definitely remember playing the original Horizon Zero Dawn, right?
Zero Dawn.
Yeah. I definitely remember playing that one and some of those hunting grounds just being brutal, dude. Like you would get like, you know, silver or whatever, like not that bad, but then the last one, you really had to like do some unintuitive stuff or really like shortcut a thing that you weren't sure you were able to do, right?
Right. And it would be the kind of thing where you know, there would be bronze would be 10 minutes and silver would be 7 minutes and gold would be 3.5 minutes.
Right. And you're like, how does this even happen? Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe they took some of that feedback to heart and made it a little bit easier for folks there, because that's nice.
Yeah. So one thing that I have started to get into as I've started to progress a little bit more is the fact that in this game, they have really broadened the combat options. So you have a lot more, let's call them combos, that you can unlock through the skill tree. So the one that I just unlocked lets you knock an enemy back and then jump. You basically jump at them and either jump back in the direction that you jumped from in the first place and fire an arrow at them, or you can somersault over them to get behind them.
Interesting. It gives you some positioning options there more than just like the first one. I remember it was a lot of like, well, should I use this type of arrow or this type of arrow? And then did I want to use the like bow gun or the like harpoony thing?
Right. Do I want to swing my stick? Do I want to swing my stick harder?
Right. Or like, you know, shoot an arrow like this or shoot a different kind of gloopy arrow with poison on it or whatever. Right.
Yeah. So all that is still there and that's all still the base of the combat. But now there are a lot of ways to sort of refine your fighting style.
That's cool. Cause like definitely you could get overwhelmed in that first game and it sucked pretty bad if you were fighting like two or three big enemies.
Yes.
So you couldn't really have ways like, yes, you had a dodge, but you didn't have like moves, I guess is the word I would use. Right. Now it sounds like they give you some cool moves.
Yeah. So you pretty quickly too will unlock a burst ability, which lets you do things like camouflage yourself. So you blend into the surroundings unless you are actively attacking. So if you want to up your stealth combat game, now when you move between cover, you're basically cloaked.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so there are abilities that you can charge up through combat, and then you release the charge, and it does, depending on which one you have equipped, it does different things.
That's cool. Yeah, that's something new.
So definitely a lot more options for how you want to tackle fights and exploration. So it definitely feels like progression, building on what they built in the first game.
Well, just like in Elden Ring, more options are always good.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, that is, I think, maybe an episode, unless there's anything else you want to cover here, towards the end.
No, I think we're good. Oh, you know what? I did see you took in a ball game.
Yeah.
It is truly summertime now. So there's no better way to celebrate than taking in a summer baseball game. How was that? How are the Padres doing?
It's actually really great that you bring this up because we had such a fun experience. The Padres are doing all right. They're around 500. It seems like they're every day you hear another person going on the IL. And another day we're bringing this guy up or this other guy from AAA. And
oh yeah. Yeah. Baseball
as usual. Right. But, when we were there, we were having a wonderful time, watching the game. They were winning. Everything was cool. The scoreboard broke, like in a weird way. So, like, you know, most ballparks have like multiple different places you can look to see what's going on, right?
Right.
They have a big scoreboard maybe that shows like who's batting and like some statistics or whatever, usually a picture or whatnot. And then there's usually a smaller scoreboard that lists the like by innings, you know, here's the 1-1 and 2-1 and like all that kind of stuff, right? And then at the end, usually there's like a runs and a hits and an errors, like kind of a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that scoreboard just kind of like seemed to stop working. It just kind of went black in the middle of it for some period of time.
Not the best.
No. But, you know, there are other places to keep track of the score and you know, show it on other boards, you know, at various points. But then on the other side of the stadium, there's another one of those like mid-level banners or whatever that often shows like the balls and strikes and the outs.
Uh-huh.
And then like who's batting maybe. And, you know, then maybe like a score at the end or something, like, you know, stuff will change on that one, right?
Okay, yeah.
But that one also froze. And so it permanently showed there was one ball, no strikes, and two outs. And I forget, it didn't have a person's name on it, and the score was still listed there, but was now wrong. Because it showed like it was the bottom of the sixth or something, right?
Someone really needed to unplug it and plug it back in.
Okay.
It is now the eighth inning. Both teams have scored. Still showing that up there. And, like, it's very funny. You know, we're sitting around and everyone is kind of like having to like you know, we're talking to the other fans in the stands with us, and they're kind of like, okay, what's going on? Like, what's the score still? You know, like keeping track of balls and strikes on my hands. Like, you know, trying to like remember what's actually happening here, because it's so easy to forget if you're not like paying strictest attention, like what's actually happening, how many outs do we have? Because now there's no place to see it, right? Like all the places, you know, that are showing what's going on aren't working.
Yeah, you can imagine the one guy who comes to every game and always brings his own score book to score every inning has suddenly arrived.
He's like the most popular person in his section, right? Yeah,
everybody's buying him a beer.
Yeah, and so then the big scoreboard, which was still working, you know, partway through like maybe the eighth inning or something, you see a like little cutout appear in the bottom corner of it, and they have like edited in the score bug from the TV broadcast. You can see the outs and who's on base and like the score.
Yeah.
And then like by the next inning, I think stuff started working again. Like the balls and strikes counter on the side got back up to date. And I don't think they ever got the inning count, like with all the separate innings back working.
Okay.
But they eventually got that other side working again. And you know, it's like the eighth inning or ninth inning or something by this point. But the game was like had gotten close during this time. So it was like now it was important to know, like, okay, we were winning and then they caught back up. So we were tied for a while. And then like, what's the score here? But they did win. And so that was great to see. You know, always good to see your team win, right?
Yeah. Gotta love it.
Yeah. So we had a wonderful time out in the ballpark. Gas Lamp is a great place to go visit. We hit up a couple breweries downtown that might be cool. If you guys want to hit some of those, let me know. I have recommendations.
Oh, yeah. We'll all be down there quite soon here.
Yeah. So, you know, not quite reconnaissance for that stuff since we were sort of the wrong section of downtown, but always a good time down there going to see a ball game. So, yeah, thank you for reminding me about that. I should have brought that up. It was a really fun time. And if people need to be reminded, Michael, about where they can find this podcast, where should they go?
They can go to podcast@wewaregamers.com. Send us an email. Let us know what you like doing on evenings in the summertime. Now that the weather's turned a little warmer and people are getting out.
You know what's nice? We cook s'mores at home sometimes. That's nice.
Ooh,
that's a good summer activity.
Yeah, we were just talking about making some popsicles at home.
Ooh, homemade popsicles are legit.
Yeah.
Plus, if you really want to, you can, as an adult, you know, you could put a little.
Yeah, make some special for the adults.
Yeah, some adult ones would be very nice in the summer.
Yeah, people can also get at us on the social medias and go check out our YouTube channel.
Yeah, yeah, Andy puts a lot of hard work into that stuff, and we also appreciate you on there. So youtube.com/@WeWereGamers. Like, subscribe, comment. I don't know. Algorithms, how do they work? I don't know.
Who does know?
Truly not me. And we'll be back next week. I think Andy will be back from assignment next week.
I think so.
Until then, folks, we'll see you soon.